This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is the Morning Run with Lin Mark and Wong Xiaoning, 8:47 a.m. Friday the 24th of April. And in about 15 minutes, we're going to be bringing you the KLCI opening numbers, as well as some of the latest corporate news. We're also running a poll on the BFM Twitter account, that's at BFM Radio, asking you, have you changed your shopping habits during this movement control order? Tell us how and why, or why not. 150 votes so far, 85% have said yes. And we've had a lot of comments, including, I think the consensus seems to be that people are now shopping with military precision, but do continue to give us your thoughts. In the meantime, we're taking a look at what's been happening over in Europe. So Europe's economy has suffered a massive blow this month when government restrictions to contain the coronavirus left companies scrambling to stay afloat. An estimate by IHS Market of a private sector activity in the euro area plunged to just 13.5 from 29.7 in March.
Now, the drop was sharper than economists had anticipated and marks the lowest reading for the Purchasers Managers Index since it began more than two decades ago. Now, the report is, if anything, a grim preview for European leaders who are discussing this possible 2 trillion euro rescue plan for the region. Now, governments have already pledged billions of euro in aid, and the ECB stepped up its efforts to shield the most vulnerable countries.
So for more on this, we have on the line with us Simon Baptist, Global Chief Economist at the Economist Intelligence Unit, to give us some insight. Simon, thank you very much for joining us. Can you hear us this morning?
Yes, good morning.
Hi. So could you give us some insight first into how COVID-19 has affected the EU's economy for the near term?
Europe has been one of the worst hit regions by coronavirus, and firstly in a medical sense with high numbers of cases and high numbers of deaths, but also in an economic sense. At the Economist Intelligence Unit, we expect that Europe's economy is going to shrink by around 6% in 2020. Of course, there's some variation within that, but almost no country is going to emerge unscathed, and we do expect this crisis to widen inequalities within Europe and also increase some of the existing tensions within the European Union.
And you mentioned tensions here, right? So clearly there's a divide between EU members on how to handle the economic fallout from COVID-19. Do you actually see a resolution in sight?
It's going to be quite difficult for there to be a resolution at the European at the EU level. I mean, healthcare is part of a national competency, so that's under the purview of all the national governments, and populations and are very sensitive, obviously, about the outcomes of COVID-19, about the impact of lockdown measures, and then also want their own healthcare systems to be focusing on people domestically. So it's been quite difficult to get cross-border cooperation. And in fact, there's been a really wide diversity of strategies amongst the European economies. And I think it shows that there is no universally useful strategy for dealing with COVID-19. It does depend a lot on national circumstances. You have some countries, for example, Belgium, which entered lockdown quite early and followed all of the policy prescriptions, yet have had a really high number of cases and deaths, whereas other countries, like, say, Sweden, have had a much more relaxed approach, are still allowing public gatherings and a much more voluntary method of social distancing, yet have had far fewer cases. In that example, it's probably because Sweden already has a high proportion of people who work at home and a high proportion of single person households. So there's a big diversity in outcomes across Europe.
And so is this the same reason why a joint debt issuance program is something that Germany and the Netherlands reject, this kind of a almost public pushback against it?
Yeah, the mutualization of European debt has been a difficult topic for many years. And as you say, countries like Germany, the Netherlands, and also Austria, I'd add into that basket, have long opposed the mutualization of debt. And this is why at the European level, it's unlikely there's going to be a response that is big enough to deal with the crisis. Ultimately, the response is going to have to come down to national governments. And then we come back to the problem that the governments that really do need to spend a lot to get out of this, for example, Spain and Italy, which have been very, very badly hit, don't have the financial resources to do so, whereas those that have been hit less hard like Austria, do have the ability to spend their way out of it. So those fiscal tensions within the EU are probably going to widen, and the gap between Germany and the struggling South will also get bigger.
Meanwhile, the European Commission is floating a 2 trillion euro plan for economic recovery. Now, what do you think needs to be included in this plan?
I mean, anything the European Commission can get through will be useful. I mean, they are doing the new budget, so the multi-year fiscal framework at the moment, and there are some members who are trying to conflate the two processes and get the new multi-year, the new MFF scheme to deal with coronavirus as well. And that's just going to make the politics of things even more difficult. I think the best thing that the EU could be focusing on now, given that the healthcare response is going to mostly be at the national level, is thinking about channels for cooperation between between the countries. And there already has been some of that, where we have seen some patients being shifted across borders where one healthcare system has more capacity than another.
So considering that that Europe, even before the pandemic, was already in some economic trouble, what can they do now to help reignite the struggling economy?
Like the rest of the world, the thing that's going to reignite the European economy right now is an improvement in the healthcare situation and a reduction in the number of infections, and then public confidence to go about normal daily life. So really, until the COVID-19 crisis itself and the biology and the epidemiology of the disease is understood better and is then under control, it's going to be very hard to have an economic recovery. So I think, like in most places, in the short term, the focus needs to be on support for those people who are in desperate financial straits in the short term. So things like unemployment insurance being widened to include the self-employed, and also provision of more healthcare services and expanding that access to be ready when things improve. But while Europe's had very low growth rates, I mean, if we take a global picture, I mean, Europe does have most of the world's richest countries. So it's a region with very high living standards. It's got mature demographics, so population growth there is lower than in many other places. So because it's already rich and it has low population growth, one would expect to see lower growth in Europe than elsewhere. But certainly is true that some of the policy difficulties of the region that it has had have held them back.
And Simon, you know, I've read some articles which say that, the death of the EU would be actually this health crisis. Do you think so? Is there any, is there that much needed solidarity?
I don't think that this crisis will cause the end of the EU or a breakup of the Eurozone. I mean, there are existing tensions, which we've seen in the past. You know, for example, when we had the Greek debt crisis earlier in the century, and those tensions are going to remain, and there'll be some of them that will be brought to the fore by this. For example, that gap between Germany and Southern Europe. But I don't think this crisis will be enough to break up the EU. It still serves a very useful purpose, and it, despite everything, is still the world's best example of countries cooperating to achieve common outcomes. So I don't see this this causing the end of the EU. But the response is mostly national because it's healthcare.
Now, Simon, prior to this, the common border within the EU allowed for ease of trade. But will that now be an issue with so many of these countries in some form of a lockdown?
It is probably one of the reasons why the spread was so quick in Europe, because there were no controls of movement across borders within the Schengen passport zone. It did mean that once the virus took hold in the initial hotspots, such as northern Italy, it then could spread very easily beyond that. I probably do expect that we'll see more appetite in Europe for not having complete freedom of movement. Politicians in Europe, and also the populations, though, do recognise that freedom of movement, I mean, firstly, it's just extremely convenient, but it also has been very good for economic growth. It's allowed a lot of migration of people from areas where there's not many jobs to areas where there is more. So it has led to an increase in employment when we look at Europe, the European economy as a whole. So I think it will broadly stay in place, but there certainly will be more appetite for some restrictions or more sharing of information or tracing of movement, which wouldn't have been possible before this crisis.
Thank you very much for speaking with us this morning, Simon. That was Simon Baptist, Global Chief Economist at the Economist Intelligence Unit, giving us his thoughts on the European economy, which is in pretty dire straits. The IMF has forecasted that the EU is going to see one of the sharpest slumps in almost a century. And I think the estimate is a contraction of about 7% this year as a result of this coronavirus pandemic. So it's how they're going to reconcile within the Eurozone, not just from a healthcare perspective, but also from an economic perspective as well.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think which countries will actually fare better in this is also those who have the most money or those who are most willing to spend on the fiscal plan, right? So those who unfortunately have been seen the highest death rates, the highest infection, are those who are also the weakest from an economic perspective. So the likes of Spain and Italy, where debt to GDP is above 140%. And because they are part of the European Union, they can't actually print money, and they're, you know, what they pay in terms of what they issue debt is also way too high. So, you know, they're really in a tight spot. Whereas countries like Germany, even the UK, Austria, have had very generous fiscal support plans, which will help them recover from this crisis. So I don't know how EU plans to move forward. It's going to be very tough because even yesterday, Angela Merkel showed resistance towards this debt mutualization.
Absolutely, because there is also that nationalist sentiment, right? You know, we have just enough to take care of ourselves. You know, why should we also be shouldering the burden of other countries who they see as fiscally more irresponsible? It's not a problem that's going to be resolved overnight. Right now, though, we are heading into the 9 o'clock news bulletin. And after that, the KLCI opening numbers for you. Stay tuned to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.